Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we do is about changing the world of work so that all organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Cody Thompson. But today, there's something different, Cody. What is that?
We are in the office, Pat.
That's right. Our first day back in 2 months, almost to the day.
I heard a helicopter earlier. I'm pretty sure they're sending it for us.
They're coming after us. We are here doing our podcast back. We're kind of resuming work.
That's right.
Keeping a little social distancing here. We got people cleaning our office today, and it looks like we're starting up again. You know, it's a gray area these days, what's allowed, but we're back in our office. Other people have been back for a lot longer, and so today's the first day.
Yeah, that's right. I'm excited for it. I put real clothes on and even some dress shoes, so it feels great.
Yeah, it's crazy to be wearing pants, but we're glad to be here. It's exciting to be here, and we hope everybody out there is doing well. Today's podcast is about what, Cody?
The topic is data is overrated, and I'm very excited about this
one. Yeah, we can't wait to talk about that. Data definitely is overrated, and it's something that I think a lot of people know, and yet we're still succumbing to the fact that we think data is everything, and we can't wait to talk about that. And there's really two big reasons why it's overrated.
Right, and what we're going to do is we're going to first talk about data and why it's overrated, then we're going to get into how people use data and how leaders use it to make decisions, and then sort of talk about our process and how we think it might actually be better suited to incorporate data into decision-making.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly. So when I say there's two reasons, one, data is often biased. And secondly, even if people aren't biased, it's hard to get accurate data.
Right.
And, you know, throughout history, we've seen this, you know, decisions that were made based on data that turned out not to be right. I mean, we can look at the weather. You know, we have more data than ever. It's 2020, and yet it rains a day that we're supposed to go to the beach because it's supposed to be sunny. And we're like, how could they get that wrong?
Except in San Diego, they're pretty set.
Yeah, yeah. That's just logic. And, you know, political polls are wrong in 2020.
That's right.
And, you know, and I remember, this isn't really a big surprise to me because I remember being in college and doing psych experiments, and you have to get data, you know, you have to control for all your variables, but you're sitting there and you kind of have a hypothesis and you're doing all this data, and you're kind of rooting for it to say something, and there's bias there. Like, right. Oh, we'll just write this down on this one.
And you know, I think part of it is deconstructing the idea that data is just absolute fact. It's sort of like people throw it to data to say, well, look at the data. Let's just see what the data says. And I'm sure that this topic is making a lot of listeners uncomfortable. This is one that we love to talk about because we are naturally inclined to use intuition a bit more than data. But I think you're exactly right. There are so many historical evidences for data not being accurate and for it being biased.
Now, by the way, let's just say right now, we are not fans of not using data.
Right, of course.
Data is hugely important, but it's only one factor and it often gets far too much credence. And I think about this, and in the world of climate, I mean, people might not know this, but in 1975, I was 10 years old, that's not that long ago, and that wasn't the dark ages. The cover of Time magazine said that we were on the verge of a new ice age, that all the data predicted that the world was cooling. And in fact, they were talking about using nuclear energy to melt the polar ice caps so that it wouldn't freeze over. And so
let's go with that.
Right. And then we go, you know, and we go even 20 years later, we decided the world was warming because all the data showed that, and that many of the cities in Florida and along the East Coast would be, many of the homes that were on the coast would be underwater. Mm-hmm. And that now we're 20 years beyond that prediction, and it clearly was wrong. And so maybe it's time we said, you know, data is one thing. Sometimes it's biased. Sometimes it's just not accurate because it's hard to know.
Right.
That's not to say anything about the climate we care about the environment or not. It's just to say data is often completely insufficient.
Right. And the other caveat to make up front is that there certainly are industries where data-heavy decision-making is better. You know,
right.
The problem is that because it's better in one industry, everybody thinks that that's what they need to do in their own businesses or how they should make decisions. If you're in, you know, internet advertising or, you know, something that's really heavily laden on data, sure, absolutely use it as a really big part of your decision-making. But too often people rely exclusively on data.
Right. Ignoring it is foolish. We know that. But far more than not, people over-rely on it and find themselves feeling burned. I mean, we're in this time right now of the coronavirus. And I mean, goodness gracious, I feel like I'm at a tennis match. My neck hurts because I look at one article and I'm like, oh my God, we should shut this economy down for the next 3 years. The next one, I think, oh my gosh, we should have opened up years ago.
Right.
And the problem is two different sets of data can tell you two different things. And at the end of the day, all good decisions come down to what we would call intuition and gut feel and judgment and integrative thinking and wisdom and collective wisdom and principle and values. Mm-hmm. And so when someone says, we're going to make this decision based on our gut feel, that should not mean we're not going to use data. It just means at the end of the day, no piece of data can tell you the right decision.
That's right.
And all the best, the very best CEOs I've ever worked with and the very best leaders I've read about know this. And they're very clear about this.
Yeah, we even had a one funny story that we did on our sports podcast that actually applies here.
And I love this.
So Bill Belichick, coach of the Patriots.
Who's not a soft guy.
No. And actually is one of the winningest coaches, probably the greatest coach of all time.
Yes.
And he was in an interview and one of the reporters asked him, hey, when you're thinking about this first down play, when it's fourth down or your goal line, how much emphasis do you put on what the analytics say the play call should be?
And I love this. And he very calmly responded. I'll tell him the response.
He says, less than zero.
Less than zero. He said, at that moment, I have to be looking around thinking about what's going on with my team. What's their morale? How do I feel in my gut? Do we think this is the right thing to do? But so many people say, oh no, the statistics prove that you should go for two in this situation.
Right.
But there's so much more than statistics to look at there.
It's a copycat league. So many people, this is where data sort of leaks its way into everybody's decision-making. It's like one piece comes out that says, hey, 60% of the time, this is the play that you should use on fourth down and one. And so people rely exclusively on that data. And really what you're saying and what we're saying is, sure, data is just overrated. We're not saying it's, you know, it's not a part of the equation or unnecessary at all. But it's overrated in the sense that people put way too much weight in what that 60% value might say. And then they hang their hat on the decision because that's what the data said.
Exactly. You know, I've had the privilege of working with some of the best CEOs out there at companies like Southwest Airlines. You know, I've talked to Alan Mulally at Ford, and we use them as examples. And there's a zillion other ones at small companies, medium-sized companies. And the very best ones will tell you, I use data to inform me, but then I have to look at things and say, what is the logical, common sense, intuitive response that we have to do? And I've watched them make decisions, and they do not pull out a binder and look at the numbers. The numbers have been informed, and they've been thinking, but then they sit down and look at each other across the table, and they ask each other questions like, what makes the most sense here?
Right.
And what does your gut tell you?
Well, and in a sense, that's another form of data, right?
Right?
I mean, like we talk about this all the time, is that soliciting the input of your team members.
That's the key, input.
Yeah, it's another input. And it's not just input on an Excel spreadsheet. It's into input for the personalities around the room and their collective integrative thinking that allow you to make better decisions.
Right. So the big question here today is, given the fact that it's overwhelming that data alone, or data even primarily, leads to the best decisions, why, in our experience, do so many leaders, even most leaders, erroneously believe that the best decisions in running their organizations, for-profit, non-for-profit, church, school, whatever, why do they think that data is gonna give them everything they need, and they rely on it?
Right.
And we see this far too often, that they're like, well, I need to get that white paper. I need to take more time. And why do they do that still? And we kind of came to the point that there's four big reasons why.
Right. And there's probably more, but these are the ones that bubbled to the surface.
Right. And I think probably the biggest one is that people are afraid of being blamed for making a mistake. And they feel like making a decision based on data will mitigate the personal responsibility, the blame. In case it goes wrong, they could say, well, I relied on data.
Right. Let's look at what the data says. And then you abdicate your decision-making power to, hey, here's what the numbers suggest, so why don't we go with this?
Exactly. And that's why so many decisions are so slow in a company, because people are waiting for data to tell them, well, here's your best bet for avoiding being blamed. And of course, the best leaders are like, I don't care about blame. I want to optimize decision-making.
Right.
And I will step up and say, this is what I think we should do, regardless of the outcome, because right now, this is the collective wisdom we have in the room.
Right. And I imagine as I'm hearing us talk, I imagine there are people out there in two camps, really, which is like the intuitive integrative thinking camp that's like, yes,
finally,
thank you guys for saying this. And then the data driven camp that are feeling uneasy about like, no, but this is a really big part. And I think what we're saying is it requires both.
Right. And certainly there are leaders who said, data shmeta, I don't care about the numbers. I've been around the block and here's the right decision.
Right.
That's stupid.
Right, of course.
But for every one of those, there's 90 that go, let's use data.
Right.
I mean, I really do think I've come across so few leaders who ignore data compared to the ones that think it they worship it.
Right. And I think it goes back to the umbrella for this whole thing is that it's overrated, that it actually is. We need to deconstruct it in a way so that it can be accurately weighted in decision-making. And so it goes to our next point, which is why so many leaders lean on data is that it's impossible to scientifically validate intuition.
Right.
Right. So it's like,
prove it to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so you have this gut instinct or we're trying to make a decision. And even in the face of data that might even say otherwise, we feel like, man, we should move in this direction. It's so ambiguous. It's so amorphous. You can't point to scientific proof that, hey, this is the right way to go.
You know, I remember years ago, and we didn't plan on talking about this, but I was at a software company before I started this company, and I was in charge of training and development. And I went to the executive team and asked them for $1 million, which was more back then, to do leadership development and management training. And one of the executives said, prove to me that the ROI of this investment is worth it.
Right.
And my training in a management consulting firm would have actually made up a bunch of numbers right. to make the statistics like, well, here's what's going to happen. And this, turnover is going to go down by this much. And this, you know, and you can make data say anything.
Right.
But I remember thinking, this is not a decision that could ever be justified by data because I didn't know. But I said to him, I said, I cannot convince you by proof. I have to ask you if you think this company having better leaders who people understand their role and looking at the curriculum, if you think that would make this a better company and it would be justified that way.
Right.
And they said, we're going to do it because I had to appeal to their intuition. That didn't mean that I was saying there's no input here, but if I tried to justify it purely on that, I'd have been making things up purely to get them to agree to something without real information.
Right. And you probably could have manufactured some numbers that would have justified it.
I've done it in my career in other forums.
Right. And I think what's so interesting is that, you know, I think back to when I was at a startup that I was at that was founded by two people from a big data company.
Right.
And every decision, there were five of us in a room and we were making a product and it was like, hey, we should tweak it this way. If we didn't have an Excel spreadsheet or a list of customers that were asking for this, then there was no way we were going to get that decision made.
Yeah.
And I think what it is as someone who has relied on intuition, I felt like a fish out of water for the first 10 years of my career thinking like, oh, unless I can figure out Excel, I'm never going to be able to be involved in decision making because what I bring to the table in my integrative thinking and intuition is just not valued. It's not part of the equation.
Right. Which leads me to our third example, which is muscle memory. Like those guys came from a company where they did big data.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I know friends of mine who were engineers. Or if they were a lawyer. And so they have muscle memory that says, if we can't find it in a book or going through stacks of data, then it must not be real.
Right.
In fact, we have a CEO I've been working with recently who has these monthly ops reviews where they pour through data for an entire day. And they fly people in from around the world. They haven't in the last couple months. And we were talking to them about this, and they haven't necessarily made the right decisions. And we asked them, and the CEO said, yeah, I hate those meetings. I think they're not that great. And then we talked to some of his direct reports. They go, yeah, we hate those meetings too. And then we talked to some of the people that went to them and they go, oh yeah, they're a pain in the ass. And we're like, so why do you keep doing them? And they said, yeah, we probably shouldn't. We're going to cancel them. And the next thing we know, they're having another one of those meetings.
Right.
And you know what it is? They're so used to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the muscle memory of, we have to go through this.
So even earlier this week, I was on a call with three lawyers and we were trying to make a decision collectively about what the organization was going to do. And the way the three lawyers interacted with the decision-making process was to go down to the letter of the law and figure out what's our exposure if we make this decision, you know, like what's our potential exposure. And I am so not inclined to do that. I'm not a lawyer by trade or have any background in that. And the decision seems simple to me. I don't even think we need to go into the risk or benefit of this and into the litigation of it. we should take a step back and make the simple decision based on the principles of the organization.
Yes, which brings us to the last reason. And there's this, what we call the sophistication bias. It's like, you mean you're going to make a decision that quickly and with such a simple principle? Don't you think we need to do the due diligence of going through this? And while due diligence is wonderful when it's due,
right?
But there's undue diligence too.
And that, like, happens way more often right? than not.
It's like, yeah, the principle and the common sense here makes this very clear that the answer is no.
Right.
I'm like, well, let's go jump through some hoops for a couple weeks.
And you said something earlier. It's like, sometimes people think making a quick decision is wrong innately.
Right.
It's like, oh, we arrived at that decision too quickly. Let's spend more time. Let's dig more into the details of it. We do this fun thing in our office, which we love, and ends up kind of working out every time.
And, you know, and I think you can do this no matter if you're a billion-dollar company or you're a church or a school or a small consulting firm. And I really think this is the best way to make decisions with the best input. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily data. I mean, it's the definition of data, but the best input. And we use this all the time at the table group, and it serves us so well. And I know other companies do this too. And when we consult to companies, we encourage them too. So go ahead and describe it, Cody.
So let's say we're trying to price a new product or something like right. that, or that'll be a really easy way of kind of teasing this out. We have some data. We know what generally there's some other products like it in the market. So we have right. that as a framework.
Or sometimes people will even say to me, hey, let's go do a bunch of research to figure out what we should do. And I'll say, wait, before we do that though.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go around the room. Maybe there's eight of us in the room, and we'll say, everyone individually think about what you think this should cost and write your answer down. And
then don't say it out loud. Don't bias anybody else. Just write it down.
And then we go around the room and we make everyone say, what do you think the cost is? And generally, I would say 9 out of 10 times, we're within a 10 to 15% window of each other.
Yeah.
Generally, the average is not that far off. And then even if we go and do some additional research, we're generally right in the ballpark. Yeah. You
know? What's interesting is, if we weren't close, then I'd say, oh man, we need more research.
Yeah, totally.
We need more data. But usually we're all really close, and we're doing that either because we don't want to be wrong, or we think this is too easy, or I don't know how to scientifically validate that, or we're just so used to having to do 6 weeks of research.
Right.
And so I think let's tap into our collective intuition, and that should give us confidence to make decisions without a bunch of data that might not even be accurate.
Right.
And so that's the point of this podcast, is just to say, it's easier to defend the use of data, but it's often not wise to do it. And don't deny the value of intuition and good judgment and wisdom and integrative thinking and common sense. Mm-hmm. Now, when you go back to work and you do that, it's really hard to win that argument based on just the reality, because people who argue for data seem to have more science behind them. So what I want you to do is say, hey, before we go do a bunch of research, let's do our best to guess at what the answer will be, and see how close we are.
Right.
And if anything, that will narrow the research and maybe make the information gathering and the data analysis quicker and more effective.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is, if you're listening to this and you're a leader or you own a company, it's okay to relinquish some of the control that data has in the decision-making process. It's okay to introduce a little integrative thinking, to crowdsource the collective wisdom of your team. Not only okay, you should be doing that.
Right.
And so I think, like, the idea of this is sort of like, data is overrated. Let's like live into a new reality of decision making and work, where we tap into people's intuition and integrative thinking, and we make better decisions as a result.
Right. And that's not biased by one political party or one political thing or what you believe. It's like, we're trying to make the best decisions for the common good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think everybody needs to agree on. And data can be manipulated. It doesn't provide enough to make the best decision for the common good.
Yep.
That's what we're saying. So we hope that's helpful for you. We would love to hear from you if you have situations in your workplace where you've seen this play out, where data has led you in the wrong way because you put too much emphasis on it, or where you've relied on intuition and common sense and it's worked out for you, or if you're just frustrated with one or the other. We love all kinds of feedback, so send that to us if you could. And we look forward to talking to you again from our offices. We're back. We're glad to be back. We hope you're safe and you're doing well. God bless.